Put those searchlights up on the tower, right now. Move, move.
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Hello, I'm Herb, and welcome to Community Spotlight. Each week I try and bring in a person, an individual, to talk about their journey, an organisation, to talk about themselves, all their events. And this morning I've got the National Parks Association Armidale branch, and I've got Lynn Hosking and Pat Schutz to help me. Good morning, you two.
Good morning. Good morning.
Well, thanks for coming in and having a bit of a chat. We did have a chat at your 50th birthday, which was last year. So you're 51 now, and you do a fantastic job in Armidale to raise awareness of our national parks. But what are your other goals for the National Parks Association?
Basically, to introduce people to the wonders of nature and the importance of protecting our unique natural heritage. And we also pay due respects to the First Nations connection to country. So both a sort of a nature journey and a cultural journey to a certain extent. And over the last 51 years, we've been involved with a lot of the establishment of national parks in the area, the extension of some, but also really working hard to protect a lot of areas such as travelling stock routes, crown lands, and to prevent things happening that will damage nature.
So you had a very nice quote there before you went on air. It was something along the lines of protecting nature through community action. I think that sort of sums it up very nicely. What else have you been involved in? Some monitoring and...
Well, we're not the National Parks and Wildlife Service. That's a very important distinction. In fact, NPA preceded NPWS about 1957 it was founded, and our branch, as you said, is 51 years old, so pretty old.
So you talk about primary with forestry and Crown Reserves. So we've had the recent announcement of the Great Koala Park.
That was a fantastic announcement indeed.
And that's taking in a fair bit of country on the Eastern Fall, and a lot of state forest areas will be moving across into the National Park, and it'll be the Great Koala Park.
It's been an engagement for about at least 15 years by NPA NSW. There are branches down the coast of NPA. You know, everybody gets on board around the state and lobbies, but it has been a wonderful achievement.
A fantastic achievement.
So we talked about off air about the Great Koala Park by protecting the koala, let's say the iconic species, which is the koala, even though it's cryptic and hard to find at times, but by protecting that koala, there's all these other species that's protected. Tell me about what you understand that to be.
At Styx Forest, the greater glider is our iconic species. They are the most gorgeous little animal, and much easier to find than a koala, especially if you go at the right time in the evening. Even through the night, you see them in their feed trees. They really are a very special animal.
Along with the greater gliders out there, you've got at least 22 other endangered and vulnerable species, and the greater glider was declared endangered in 2022 after the
big fires.
The fires, because what happened then was that 47% of their population declined across the state over a 20-year period. There are some animals out there that are very, very hard for people to see, and not many people get to see them, such as the brilliant rufous scrubbird, which is one of the most ancient songbird in Hastings River mouse, you know, tiny little species as well as the more dramatic ones.
Yes, so it's protecting from that habitat destruction, which is, I mean, forested operations have been, let's be serious, have been in action for many, many years through on the Eastern Fall.
Indeed.
A lot of the timber was then shipped out to through Yeranga and different ports to Brisbane and Sydney to build houses and a whole lot of different things. But we're sort of moving to a different stage, I suppose, in our society where we're trying to protect more of our species.
Not only that, I think, Herb, but also operations have changed over time, the way things are done in logging the forests, and also decreasing species. In this region, we've actually lost species such as the rock wallaby populations from Matunga, grey-crowned babbler. The region honeyeater is extremely, extremely rare now, and frog species. So over the landscape, we can see a decline in species. So where we have populations still healthy, we really see a very strong, urgent need to protect those areas.
And particularly at this moment, we're battling to protect Styx Forest. Forestry, I've been visiting Styx Forest for a little over 50 years now. When I first visited Styx Forest, forestry seemed to be very responsible. They did selective logging. They allowed an area to recover before they went moved back into it again. And at that time, I didn't see it as a problem. I've been out there quite a few times in the last couple of years, and forestry have increased logging. I think it was from 4% per year to about 12% of the forest per year, and absolutely trash it wherever they're going. All they leave is spindly little trees behind. They don't leave anything that would support wildlife. They destroy the understory, and it really is becoming urgent to protect that area.
So is that the demand, though, for the hardwood forests?
Just to follow on from that for a moment, 25 years ago, Armidale NPA, we've been trying to protect for at least 25 years, in 1998 put together a very substantial submission with other groups. This was under the Regional Forest Agreement, and it resulted in the creation of Kunawara National Park, trying to link up New England and Oxley Parks. However, and we were very judicious in the compartments. We didn't do a big ambit, put it all in, because we respected that forestry was doing a pretty good job, and we respect people had jobs in forestry. But some of the prime areas that we advocated to go in, such as rainforest and old growth forest and steep slopes, missed out. And in the last 5 to 10 years, we are absolutely devastated at the devastation that is now occurring out there.
So I go back to that earlier statement. Is that because of the demand for the hardwood material of forestry and our urban populations wanting more and more hardwood timber?
In actual fact, the hardwood, we've got out of hardwood for building purposes. Building frames are now steel or pine, hardly any hardwood. And what we're really sad about is that iconic species and other species are losing their habitat, and the wood is being pulped, and there's an enormous amount of wastage out there.
Are you telling me then that forestry operations have changed over the time to increase the volume
of harvesting timber
that are coming out of these allotments?
Absolutely,
but they're basically going to pulp to make particle board and things like that. You said to us that pine and steel have taken over the framing.
Yeah,
is it a boutique timber?
No. I think you would find that it's mostly used for pulp and not for what we would hope hardwood would be used for. Perhaps there's some in decking, used for decking. I'll tell you, I'm going to leave you this copy of a booklet called Forest Furfies, put out by the Forest Advocacy Ministry, which has arisen out of the Uniting Church and Quaker. We produced a book called Breaches, and we've had input into that in the Styx Forest. These are available online free, and you'll find that most of the wood coming out of Styx Forest is not being used for productive purposes in our eyes.
And the amount of waste that's left behind is absolutely ridiculous.
Enormous piles of bark, huge piles of bark.
So I wonder then, you've got an industry which is predicated on removing hardwood timber out of these forest allotments. And we've got the Great Koala Park, which is taking up a number of those parcels which were previously forestry. Have any idea, once the Great Koala Park gets up and running, where those jobs that were employed in forestry will go?
I gather of the 300 jobs that 100 are being created in National Parks and Wildlife Service, and the government has all sorts of schemes to assist those who are transiting out. But also there's possibly opportunities in the softwood forests and down the coast, especially in tourism. Already some groups are lining up, and apparently it's opening up opportunities for Aboriginal endeavours.
I also read that there's a substantial financial package for retraining and for those that choose retirement. Many of the forest workers are older people.
Redundancies and things like that.
The economics of it has been heartbreaking too, because over the 4 years to June 2024, Forestry Corporation lost over $70 million from its hardwood forest division. And so New South Wales taxpayers are subsidising the current forestry of hardwood in native forests.
Well, that's quite disturbing. $70 million in taxpayer is footing that bill.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Great Koala Park. Now, my understanding, and the Styx River State Forest, my understanding is you've got the Oxley Wild Rivers National Park, mm-hmm. and you've got the New England National Park, and in the middle of it, which you talked about, those little, to join the two, in the middle of it is the Styx State Forest, which hasn't been put into the National Park.
That's correct. A part of it did go over, as I mentioned before, 25 years ago into Kunawarra National Park, partly on the eastern side. So it'll current Styx Forest adjoins Kunawarra National Park. Also up the north, it adjoins Serpentine Nature Reserve, which is extremely important. That goes through to Cathedral Rock. And at the southern end, it's Oxley Wild Rivers. And also there's another nature reserve called George's. So it's like a little jewel, a long, narrow jewel. And it's a fantastic wildlife corridor. And it's a gateway to our World Heritage recognised parks and our Gondwana declared rainforest parks. We've had people expressing huge dismay at driving north up Forest Way, tourists, and seeing the forest destruction, and south down to east and west Kundurang.
The mess that's been made, where there used to be a beautiful forest, now there's a few sticks sticking up in the air.
So let's just get serious for a minute. What impact does forestry operation have on these species that you say are endangered, threatened? You talked about having a great looking forest, and that's fine, and everybody loves looking at a native forest, but what's the actual impact on the species?
Well, it's my opinion that if forestry were allowed to continue in the way they are, there would be extinction or seriously reduced numbers of greater gliders in particular, because they need the big trees. And when you remove the big trees, you've removed their habitat, you've removed the feed trees. They glide from one very tall tree to another tall tree, and that's what forestry are taking out.
It's very important to have the age of the forest retained, because absolutely essential for greater gliders and other arboreal species are the hollows. That's the essential part of it.
But you've got the other 20 species that you talked about,
indeed,
which are also
indeed.
In the... So exactly. Is the impact with on them as well?
Yes,
absolutely.
Well, some of those are species that require hollows, but also once you take out trees, you get a hotter forest, get more risk of fire. There was fire in Styx in the 2019-2020, as well as into rainforest areas, which was almost unheard of.
So if you clear fell portions of a Styx State Forest, and that, let's say, it continues to operate, not as a national park reserve, but as a fully functioning forestry operation, do the species move out when the forestry operations occur and then move back in later, or how does that work?
Well, they basically don't have anywhere to move to, because the next section of habitat that would suit them, if it's good habitat, there's already an animal living there in the hollows. So one would assume that if you knock down a tree with a den and there's a greater glider living in it, that greater glider will die.
The tragedy is that there's been the evolution of all these species to adapt to their specific habitats. Underneath the canopy, on the ground level, you have the importance of the microzoa, the fungi, the invertebrates, the effect of the quality on the water, which is another important reason why Styx forest and river need protection, because apart from the health of the terrestrial and riparian species, we've got to consider neighbours, communities downstream, the Maclay Valley. And First Nations people in this area are really dismayed about what is happening in Styx Forest. Dungari, Gumbangir, and also Anuin people have great attachment to that area. So it's really important for it long-term to gain protection. So what we would like to see would be an immediate moratorium cessation to consider all these aspects, and in the future to see what status it should have as a protected area. It could be joining in to one of those parks or nature reserves, or it could be in its own right. I mean, there are all sorts of different levels of protected areas.
So let's talk about the Styx State Forest. Now, Pat, you had a little bit of another journey just recently. Now, tell me about that little journey.
I met some citizen scientists out at Styx Forest, and I had never looked for greater gliders before. I had read about them and I had written about them, but I hadn't actually seen them. And it took a little while to learn how to find a greater glider. I was trying to see the animal until I found that actually all what you do is you see two little yellow eyes the right distance apart, and you know you're looking at a greater glider. The first night I was out there, I found one greater glider out of its nest after the gliders had left the dens. And the second night, we all split up and looked for dens. The reason why we were searching for dens is forestry protect 50 metres around a den that has a resident greater glider. They do not. If you only see a glider in a tree later, that doesn't warrant protection because it's not actually a den. So it has to be a den tree. So for that reason, we were all searching for den trees. And so we split up. I had to stick to the road. The other young people there, they were managing to go up and down hills that I wouldn't have made it through. But walking on the road, I spotted a den, that was my one discovery. We discovered between the seven of us, there was 20 found that night, and one was mine. And when I found the den, I was shining my torch around looking for dens, and I saw these two little eyes looking at me. When I shone the torch for a little while, it popped back into its den, so it disappeared again. And I was so fascinated by it that I kept shining the torch back, and the poor little thing kept popping in and out of its den until I finally thought I better let it go and have some dinner.
So you spotted 20 dens that night.
Yeah.
How many greater gliders would you have seen?
I only saw two other greater gliders later on in the evening when they had actually emerged from their dens.
But what about as a group?
Well, as a group, in three nights that I was involved in, the first night we found 19 greater gliders, the second night 20, and the third night 24.
And were they in different parts of the forest?
Every night we were going to a different area and then spreading out so that no one counted the same den twice. Everyone took a section of that area.
So does that information go back to forestry?
Yes, that's recorded, and that will go back to forestry, and hopefully all of these dens will be protected.
So tell me about the limiting fact. This is, you talked about before, that they protect 50 metres around a den, but how effective are forestry in identifying the dens and then protecting the 50 species? So if you saw these 60 individuals and 20 dens, I would assume that forestry has already identified those.
Well, no. Forestry have found a total of 9 dens in Styx Forest, and the citizen scientists...
But it's a huge forest.
But wait for it. Citizen scientists on the 22nd of this month, of September, up to that date, they had discovered
224. So that's a bit of a shock as well, a bit like the 70 million loss of the operation of forestry.
It's the way they go about it. It's a kind of catch-22. Regulations, previously they were only looking for den trees in the daytime.
How do you identify?
You can't. No, unless you're actually sitting. Virtually impossible.
Yeah, it is absolutely impossible because the greater glider is right inside the den and is not visible in the daytime. There's no part of it visible. All it is a hole in the tree, and a hole in the tree doesn't count unless you can actually see. That's why you must see the greater glider emerging from its den in order to get protection.
Half an hour, you've got the opportunity around about dusk.
Yeah, just on dusk they emerge, and so basically you need to be in the forest at the last of the daylight, get to the location that you want to search for gliders, and then have a very bright torch, and then immediately start wandering around looking for dens.
The times I've been out there, there's every opportunity to see them during the night.
Yeah.
In the feed trees and even in the rain.
So let's just go back to this figure. So, citizen science people have identified how many?
224.
224.
That was 3 weeks ago. They've been out there since then. I haven't updated.
224, and that means that if you take into the regulations that 50 metres around each one of those
den trees
would be protected. How many are forestry identified?
Nine.
Would be useful to check with the BioNet. And also with some of the ecologists that have been working out there. I do know that when we've been out there and checked on the BioNet and checked on the harvesting plan, these areas are supposed to be thoroughly researched before the harvesting plan comes into being. We've been absolutely dismayed that we've been able to see gliders, whereas forestry surveys haven't.
BioNet, I did mention it. I had a chat with Kevin Rothschild, a ecologist, and we talked about the BioNet. And my understanding is that's where the information is stored.
Yes.
For people who do this monitoring, and anybody can go in and have a look and see. So you're basically saying of the records that forestry have submitted onto BioNet, there's nine, and then you've got nine den trees, and then you've got the citizen science over 200.
One of the reasons for that is, would it be about 9 months ago they stopped searching in the daytime? At Styx Forest, the citizen scientists discovered that in order not to find greater gliders, forestry were sending people out looking for them around midday, and you will never ever see a greater glider around midday. They're all in their dens, completely hidden. And so, of course, they weren't finding any at all. And then the rules changed, and they were required to look in the evening at the correct time. And since then, we've found nine.
The really important thing in all of this, I think, is for people to have the joy and appreciation of going out and observing quietly in the forest. It's quite a magic experience walking down track in the night in a forest. And I forgot I was in the rain once we started seeing them at night. And so what we're doing with Armidale NPA, we've recently had a meeting where we had ecologists talking about greater gliders. We've produced a whole lot of information about the values of Styx Forest, including all the endangered species, vulnerable species, including the values to First Nations peoples, including the connection, a gateway into our World Heritage and Gondwana land forests. And we've got, we've had petitions before that we've sent to politicians, letters. We've been involved with filming of the Lyrebird film. So there's an opportunity for people. The other thing that we're doing is currently we're working on the third edition of Family Outings Around Armidale. It's a lovely little booklet. We're updating it and we're putting new walks on it in the Styx Forest.
So you're suggesting people should, if they have an interest in the Styx State Forest, protecting the Styx State Forest, or the 20 species, the greater glider, the other species, or just having the forest remain a forest and not be logged by forestry operations, that they contact Armidale at npansw.org.au and you'll give them all a lot of information.
Correct.
But at the same time, I just noticed that the draft national recovery plan for the greater glider has just been put on exhibition.
That's right.
So that's another thing that people can get connected with. Mm-hmm. So if they want to get connected with that and making comment on that draft recovery plan, they contact you, or you can just do a simple Google search, National Recovery Plan for Greater Glider. It's on a government webpage, DCCEEW. But if you just do a Google search and there's a government webpage where you can actually put your own community submission in, or go to the National Parks Association Armidale branch. So it's armidale at npansw.org.au. And Lynn and Pat will help you in the process of writing to ministers because, and I said it before, that the greater glider and these other 20 species, they can't write to the minister. It's needed us to put forward the case for them, and that's what MPA does.
There's two other things. We'll have a stall at the Black Gully Festival. We'll have a sheet there for people to record their email addresses, and if they do, on our email page, we've got one list that we call the Styx list, and you'll receive all information as to when we're heading out to Styx, if there's an invitation to go out or a talk on Styx or something like that. And also, we're currently putting together some dot points for letter writing to the environment ministers, both state and federal, and the Premier and others that would be interested in receiving letters about Styx, asking that Styx be protected. And the more letters we get in, I think the stronger our chances of getting some protection. That will also be emailed out to anyone who gives us the email address.
To add to our presence at Black Gully Festival, which we're really looking forward to seeing people, we will have displays and we'll be having some creative activities too. We're joining in with a couple of the other stalls like Sustainable Living Armidale and also the Platypus Rakali group. And we're planning on having an evening out in the Styx in the late spring, early summer with a couple of ecologists for people who would like to have a guide of how to look for gliders. We also would like to have a Gratitude to Forest Day out there where we can sit and yarn and have cuppas, and maybe some First Nations people will be joining us, because there's a lot to celebrate about our beautiful nature in this area.
No, definitely. I certainly am with you with that. Just going back, the central point of connection for our community to get involved with National Parks Association or the Greater Glider or protecting the species that we talked about is armidale at npansw.org.au, and you'll get all the assistance. Or if you want to just comment separately on the National Recovery Plan for Greater Gliders, you can go Google the Recovery Plan for Greater Gliders and you'll find it. I think I'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much for coming in. We've spoke pretty well about everything, I think. And the National Parks Association is a gem in our community, and we thank you for all your efforts. And it is, and I think you did say, Lynn, walking through an active forest, which has been protected, is just one of those experiences, I think, connects our human spirit with nature. And thank you for coming in.
Thanks very much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
All right, that's Community Spotlight.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM 92.1 FM in the car and at work for great tunes and community news.